What's the most exciting and most watched sport in the United States? If you said anything else but football, you lose. Welcome to the Air Raid Attack Podcast. Nothing's more exciting than college or pro football. And when we say football, we don't mean soccer. Oh, no. We'll hang, we'll give you in-depth analysis, and you know what? Football and life have a lot in common. So you'll hear us tackle life topics sometimes, too.
Right!
So let's do it. This is the Air Raid Attack Podcast.
And here we go, here we go!
And this is your host, Air Raid Mike.
What's up, everybody? Yours truly, Air Raid Mike, your host of the unfiltered, unscripted, 100% authentic podcast. And we have a fun one ready to go. And it's never too early, you know, talk some college football, especially when you're in Oklahoma. I'm sure it's across the land as well. But spring game literally right around the corner within 2 weeks, 3 weeks now from the spring game. We will see how Oklahoma does. But speaking of Oklahoma, I got a fun guest on for today's show. His name is Matt Blackwell. He is the writer and recruiting analyst and publisher of The Crimson Captain. We're talking all things Sooners. So without further ado, Sooner Nation, let me introduce you to today's guest, the one, the only, Mr. Matt Blackwell. Matt, first of all, appreciate the follow. This is kind of how this jump started, and appreciate your time coming on the podcast today.
Hey, Mike, it's good to be with you. I appreciate you having me on, and yeah, thanks for the invite.
Absolutely, looking forward to talking some college football, primarily, of course, the Oklahoma Sooners. And first things first, tell the listeners a little about yourself, and as we roll into the show.
So I'm Matt Blackwell, and started up The Crimson Captain, feels like a couple of lifetimes ago, but it really got going, I would say, this time last year is when I started to have more of a social media presence on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days. But that's where I really started to follow recruiting and Oklahoma specifically. And start to put together some pieces of information that has slowly grown over time. And it's really just taken off from there. As we've gone along, it really got busy during the season, especially here as I started up the site and in the Discord server that we've got now in its current form. So it's been a quick and wild ride for sure.
There we go. That's awesome. And no, it's it's pretty, obviously I'm sure you got some hecklers, and I'm sure on your end, especially with what you do, it's probably, I'm sure, quite interesting, especially when you put some content out there, and I'm sure the feedback is, hopefully it's great, but I'm sure you got some pretty entertaining feedback nonetheless, regardless, even if you are trying to help the Sooner fans out there. And, we're all part of the same team, but it seems like our opinions are definitely out there differently. But nonetheless, I'm sure it's a great time on your end, especially when it gets time for a football season.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm unique. The response that I've gotten over really since I started has been 95% positive, and the rest of it has just been kind of noise. At that point, there's been some back and forth and ups and downs, but I really wouldn't trade it for anything. It's been an amazing experience. It's something that I never really anticipated would get to the point that it is, as far as the overall interest and growth and things that we've been able to experience here since we've gotten started. But You know, I think the main thing is I just really enjoy the work. I enjoy doing it. And if I didn't do that, if I didn't have people who were willing to be sources for me and my team and be that kind of resource for us, then we wouldn't be here. If I didn't enjoy it and we didn't have people who sacrificed their time and energy to provide us information that we could share with our subscribers, then it just wouldn't be possible. And I think as long as those two things are true, as long as we've got people that are interested in the content, then it's going to keep going. And I feel like we're just scratching the surface of what we can accomplish and what we can do, what we can build. The Discord platform in particular, I think has a lot of unlocked potential as far as the things that we can do. We've already seen a drastic growth as far as engagement with our community here over the last couple of months, especially, and we're excited about that. And you know, the good thing about OU football and Oklahoma athletics in general is that there's really never a shortage of content or things to talk about, and that's always good for people like us.
100% agree. And I there's not a dull moment, even, you know, once we get past May, of course, the women's College World Series down in the Hall of Fame Stadium. Of course, once all that wraps up, hopefully another national championship in Norman. But right now you would expect that. But we'll see come May. But no, there's never a dull moment here in Norman and across Sooner Nation. And kick things off, let's kind of recap last year. Oklahoma finishing 10-3, third in the Big 12. Just on the outside looking in into the Big 12 championship game, only losses in conference was to Kansas and to Oklahoma State. And then a bowl loss to Arizona in the Alamo Bowl. But as we got a lot of momentum in 23, following, I know, a disappointing from so many, you know, also not making it to our final Big 12 championship game against the eventual Big 12 champion, Texas Longhorns. You know, put that to the side. What's on your side? What's the feel like now as we head into 24? Now the SEC's inaugural SEC schedule, daunting one to put it, you know, layman's terms, it's not going to be easy one for the 24 Sooners. But, you know, what's your take on now our momentum, even though losing to Alamo Bowl, you know, we still got some momentum going. Wonderful recruiting class once again by Brent Venables and his coaching staff. What's your feel and what is the feel around Norman as we head into this season and approach our SEC inaugural year?
Well, and I'm sure you've seen this or heard this whenever you talk to OU people and OU fans. I think there's a mixture of hope and trepidation to some extent, because on one hand you know just how strong the schedule is in the SEC. Oh, yes. and that the level of competition is taking a pretty dramatic step up. You just have to look at the difference between the 24 home schedule versus the 23 home schedule to get a feel for what that's going to be like. You know, not to mention the schedule in its entirety. But OU fans, especially at this time of year, I think hope springs eternal no matter what. But there's definitely some valid reasons for that from my perspective, which is you're returning a defense that was an improvement over 2022. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but still not up to, definitely not up to the standards that Brent Venables is used to producing, and not what Sooner fans, I think, know what they need to be at in order to compete in the SEC. The encouraging thing is that the people that the players they have coming back on defense, they have a lot of ceiling left to realize as far as what they can accomplish and how they can play. You've got a lot of really young talent on the defense. I mean, guys like Peyton Bowen are coming into their second year. You've got PJ Adebawore on the defensive line, Danny Stutzman, Billy Bowman, Woody Washington coming back for their last run. There's a lot of different pieces coming together that give you a lot of hope that this can be one of the better defenses in the SEC next year. And so with that, if you can be competent on defense and you can be one of the better units on that side of the ball in the conference, then it's just a question of how quickly can the offensive line come together? Can Jackson Arnold step up and continue in his development and be effective as a leader and a signal caller? There's some unknowns there, especially along the offensive line with they lost most of the offensive line to eligibility and draft this past year. So they brought in a lot of transfers. They've got some young guys that have come up and shown a lot of promise. But until you play somebody else, you really don't know what you got and how that unit is going to gel together. There's a lot of optimism, I know, inside the Switzer Center and among the OU staff about what they have to work with there. So you can be encouraged, but there's still a lot of things left to be proven as far as the offense is concerned. So I think, again, it's a mixture of hope and trepidation. Whenever you look at how OU and the team is constructed right now, taking into account the stellar recruiting that the staff has done since they came on board, but also keeping in mind the task that's in front of them with that schedule.
Oh, absolutely. And for the listeners out there, we talk, the biggest thing I know when the SEC schedule was released early this year was, you look at it, we're replacing, the Baylors, the Iowa States, the Kansases, the Kansas States, even though they've had our number for the past few years. But, you got, Tennessee coming to Norman this year. We go to Auburn for our first SEC road game. Of course, South Carolina, which I was a little, hoping that Rattler still has some eligibility left. But, Ole Miss and the Missouris and the Alabamas comes to Norman this year. And, of course, and then the year in Death Valley at LSU. And that's what that's about, is the fact that, regardless if Oklahoma transitions fine or they transition to a year or two before they can really compete in the SEC. But the fact of the matter is, it's, and you nailed it. It's, if you look at the 23 schedule to the 24 schedule, there's no comparison. I mean, it's the Auburns, the LSU, the eventual, Floridas and Georgias and Kentuckys. And I mean, I guess you can throw Vanderbilt in as a replacement for the really bad Kansas years and Baylor years. But, jokes aside off of that, Texas A&M will be eventual back on that schedule again and so on and so forth. So it's the excitement of that. Hopefully we get some more night games. That'd be cool. Not much 11 a.m. kickoffs, but we can't control that part. But anyway, it's the excitement of actually now being in the SEC and going back to counter off of what you said off regarding the roster is, quarterback room, Casey Thompson, of course, familiar name around Norman with a Thompson, but started in Texas, then went to Nebraska, and then went to Florida Atlantic. I know he spent most of his time on the injury list on that one down there, but how comfortable are you with the quarterback room? I know not much experience for the exception of Casey Thompson, but how do you feel a little more better relieved with the experience back up to Arnold in that quarterback room?
I think you have to be pretty happy with where it's at right now, especially in today's climate where it's pretty rare to have, two starting caliber quarterbacks in the same room for any length of time. They're usually going to transfer out and look for playing time elsewhere. But you have Michael Hawkins, who is the incoming freshman. He's there in spring practice as an early enrollee. The reviews on him have been pretty incredible in the first half of spring practice here in this session. So you like what you've got there, although you don't want to throw a freshman into the fire, especially into mm-hmm. an SEC schedule. So behind him, but behind Arnold, I think what you'll see is you've got Casey Thompson. He needs to come back from injury. So Casey Thompson will be in the mix for that number two spot. But you also have General Booty back there, who is in his third year in the system, that I think a lot of people are overlooking as far as a guy that could step in, you know, if Jackson Arnold goes down for any length of time and possibly be a steadying force there. We just don't know. We'll have to see how that plays out. That number two spot will be an interesting battle in fall camp, but I don't think it'll be between Thompson and Hawkins. I think it'll be between Thompson and Booty, barring a surprise. Now, ideally, I think if it works out this way, I think Hawkins and Zerberg, the other freshman quarterback that's coming in, mm-hmm. would redshirt. But, you know, Hawkins may have something to say about that in fall camp. I definitely don't want to, you know, push a narrative of any kind that would give people the impression that Hawkins is somehow pushing Jackson Arnold for the job in any sort of way. I kid you not. I mean, I've seen that floated around by some people.
Yeah.
It's absolute nonsense. But you know, you can recognize the impact of a player like Hawkins and how well he's doing, I think, without going too far and saying things like, well, he's going to push Arnold for playing time or for the job or whatever like that. It's just, yes, Hawkins has come in and shown his talent in ways that I think surprised maybe some fans. I don't know if it surprised the staff at all, quite honestly, but I think a lot of OU fans maybe discounted what they were getting in Hawkins and even discounted his production in his last year of high school with Frisco Emerson. But by all accounts, Hawkins has shown up and done really well in practice and shown off his athletic ability to the extent that he can as they're in that protective mode with quarterbacks wearing mm-hmm. blue jerseys and all that. But there is definitely a lot of encouragement as far as what he could bring to the table. But I don't think there's any hurry from the staff or anybody else to rush him along. So I think, again, you're going to be looking at a quarterback competition for that number two spot of Casey Thompson and General Booty. And to answer your question, maybe a little bit more directly, I'm really a lot more confident in where that room stands now than even last year, because no matter how good Jackson Arnold looked, it was kind of the same scenario as what you're dealing with Hawkins this year. Yeah, he may be a future Heisman winner. Maybe. We'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter if he is that future Heisman guy. The ideal scenario is not to have to throw him into the fire in an SEC schedule as a freshman. So if you can get backup duties out of Casey Thompson and General Booty, then you're in a real good spot, and you're in probably a deeper, better spot than you have been in the last couple of years, for sure.
Yeah, and that you pretty much answered the next question that was leading into that quarterback room was simply Michael Hawkins and Hawkins, who's a phenomenal athlete just in general, but no pun intended with Booty there, everybody, just so you know. But Elite 11 finalist, and of course was named MVP at the 23 Rivals camp. But you know, you look at Hawkins, and I was gonna ask that, you know, you see some tweets, and though I don't put much into it, just simply because I do believe obviously it's Jackson Arnold's position to have. I don't see him losing it unless barring just something. I ain't gonna say anything because I don't want to be the jinx. Barring something that was to happen, but I was gonna put, you know, ask that question. Could we potentially see, if Hawkins is the guy that we sit that some say he is, could we see that push? And obviously, you definitely you answered that one without even being asked. And that's pretty pretty cool in my book, because I think Hawkins can definitely start, but I don't see that unless we just get a surprise fall camp run, that could happen.
No, I think the backup job is probably Casey Thompson's to lose. At this point, I would be surprised if it's anybody but Thompson, barring some sort of injury. But, I mean, the other thing that Casey Thompson is bringing to the table is that voice of experience. I mean, he's played a lot of football, and he's started a ton of games for several different teams. So he's really going to be more of a second quarterback's coach to some extent. And that guy, I think that Arnold can lean on when things are getting pretty gnarly, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. out there. And you never can have, you know, too many resources like that for a guy like Arnold, who's coming into his first year as a starter. And so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But yeah, I would encourage people, don't put too much on Hawkins just yet. Enjoy the fact that he's doing well, yep. that he's showing a lot of promise, and that his future appears to be bright at the University of Oklahoma. But he's not ready to go in and play against Alabama or Tennessee just yet, and that's okay.
Definitely don't rush him this year, because it could be a lot of growing pains, guys. I hate saying that, but we might, but hopefully not. But, you know, switching quarterback to running back core, a year ago was probably one of the best units we could have had out there. You know, Javonte Barnes, you named Gavin Sawchuk, you got Marcus Major and Taywa Walker. And then, of course, offseason, Walker heads out to, I believe he went off to Wisconsin. Marcus Major went up to Minnesota. Now you got Barnes and Sawchuk. And now we're looking at, obviously, I would imagine 1A, 1B. You can go 1 and 2, however fits best on that. But then you got, of course, guys like Xavier Robertson and Caleb Hicks and Samuel Franklin as well. Are we going to see pretty much Barnes, in your opinion? Could we see like a Barnes and the Sawchuk going back and forth when it comes to reps, obviously in the game, obviously outside of minus practice, but in the game, could we see a kind of a balance between Sawchuk or Barnes, or could this be Gavin's position and you may see just a Javonte kind of go in and out at times when it comes to play calling?
How they split the carries will be interesting. Sawchuk, to my knowledge, is going to be the starter and the primary guy in the backfield, at least to start out. The question in my mind is, you know, we didn't see a healthy Javonte Barnes all year last year. And we'd heard about some of those struggles as the season went along last year and as we got into the offseason after the bowl game. And he confirmed a lot of that in an interview that he did with the media. I think it was last week during one of their sessions, where he talked about the fact that he struggled with that injury all year. And a lot of it was the mental part of the game, where he was still banged up a little bit, mind you, but he was really struggling with trusting that and getting to the point where he felt like himself on the field. And when you don't have that confidence in your body, it really shows on the field. You can't hide it. And that's what we saw all year last year. And we saw it with Gavin Sawchuk too, to some extent. Now he was able to recover and get to a point where he was closer to 100%. And that's when you saw him take off and have 100-yard games in the last four games of the year. So, the reports that I've heard out of spring practice and even going back to winter conditioning was that Javonte Barnes had finally gotten to that point, both physically and mentally, where he's back to his old self. I had one source tell me after practice last week that they, just observing him and how he's running and how he's moving, that he looked like the 2022 Cheez-It Bowl version. Nice. Of Javonte Barnes rather than what we saw in 23. So that's good news for him. That's good news for Sooner fans, because if you can pair Javonte Barnes, a healthy Javonte Barnes, with a healthy Gavin Sawchuk, then you have a very, very good backfield. You have an SEC level backfield.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, you have Caleb Hicks back there, who has also shown out really well here during spring practice. He's another guy that brings a lot to the table in terms of power and speed. DeMarco has confidence in, from all accounts. And then the freshman Xavier Robinson has really worked hard in the weight room. He needed to fine tune his body a little bit and lose some weight. I think he went down from the mid 240s down to about 228 whenever they did their weigh-in right before spring practice. And then you have the transfer in that you mentioned, Sam Franklin. Franklin had what I would describe as a slow start to the spring practice period, but I think it was two or three practices ago, a source told me that he had a breakout to the point where Brent Venables even singled him out after practices as a guy that had improved drastically, and the light bulb had kind of come on for him. So there's a lot of options there for DeMarco Murray to work with, and I think probably more so than at any point since Brent Venables came on board. And it's really just a matter of which of those guys, you know, maybe other than Barnes and Sawchuk, can be sound in pass protection and all of the little details that go into playing the running back position, all of which are very important to earning Murray's trust and getting that time on the field. That doesn't even mention the incoming freshman phenom and Taylor Tatum, who he didn't enroll early, so he won't be there until the start of summer workouts here in a few weeks. But I mean, he's the number one running back in the nation coming out of high school. You know, we've seen some of his work on the baseball diamond here over the last couple of weeks. He had an inside the park home run where he displayed a lot of that speed running around the bases. I mean, he's a dynamic player. And it'll be interesting just from my perspective to see whenever he gets in and they start going through summer workouts in fall camp, is he able to work his way up that depth chart at any point and push for time? So, you know, we'll see. I mean, if guys like Caleb Hicks and Sam Franklin are continuing on their trajectory, you don't know what Xavier Robinson is going to do and what he'll have to say about things, but it could be a very crowded room with a lot of different options when it comes to the fall.
I love where the running back core is going, not just this year's group, but even, you know, moving forward. And of course, Blaylock, I believe, is another big-time pickup that they just recently got as well for the 25 class. And I like where they're going with their running back core. And, of course, DeMarco continued to recruit phenomenal running backs, and it shows why you know, he's one of the best in the country at it, not being biased, but, you know, results speaks volumes on his end as well. And of course, a position that I wouldn't say was bad last year, but probably wasn't one of the best receiving cores, even though I would argue it wasn't as bad as people made it out to be. But the receiving core, of course, Drake Stoops is gone and headed to, at least, you know, hopefully the NFL, and wish him best moving forward on that. But now, you know, obviously his presence both on and off the field is going to be highly missed. And, you know, a year ago was the Big 12 leading receiver in catches and yards, and I believe touchdown. I could be wrong on that. But we look at the receiving core. Anthony comes back, of course, disappointing into his season with the injury that he had. And then you got Farouk and of course, Nick Anderson. And then you got Deion Burks, the transfer out of Purdue, a speedster that brings a whole new element to Seth's offense and what he can do for OU this year. Receiving core, in your eyes, could we see that speed, what we've seen in the past with the Hollywoods and the Marvin Mims, and could we see this highest powered offense more so be relying a lot this year, barring something in the backfield that we might be all receiving this year, and these speedsters could be literally running track if you track meets?
I mean, I think when you look at who OU has on the roster, the constant seems to be speed. It doesn't matter who you throw out there.
Yep.
I mean, even a big guy like Jaden Gibson, I think, is running a sub-4.5 or right in there. And then you have Brennan Thompson, who is a legit track star at mm-hmm. the position. You have Nick Anderson, who isn't slow by any stretch of the imagination. Deion Burks, I think, is probably one of the faster wide receivers on the team outside of maybe Thompson and Pettaway at this point. And so it's all over the field. And to answer your question, yeah, I think you're going to see Seth Luttrell employ some different schemes and formations and plays that will try and take advantage of that. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. It's not just everybody run a go route. You know, there's a lot of different ways to create space and things that you can do that speed naturally does for you as you get into routes and start to really branch out and, you know, find different ways and things that you can do. So it'll be fun to see. You know, the guys that you mentioned are all ones to keep an eye on and guys that you'll see out there. I mean, Deion Burks is a constant. It doesn't matter who you talk to as far as who's watching spring practice. Everybody talks about Deion Burks and the impact that he's having and just how good he looks right now in every single practice, it seems. But there's another guy that I wanted to bring up who is one of the younger players. He was a freshman last year. He's coming back this year. And that's Jaquez Pettaway. I had a source tell me just the other day that from his perspective, Pettaway is the most improved of the wide receiver group from year to year. And so, yeah, there's a lot. He's going to be, I think, in behind Burks, but he's been working both the slot position and the outside spots as well. So he's got multiple opportunities to get on the fields and show what he can do and be in that rotation. But I mean, just the fact that you've got a guy like him, if he can continue in his development, earn Emmett Jones's trust and get on the field, I mean, he's got just as much speed to burn as anybody in that room. And so it's just another weapon there on the field and another guy that can come in and make sure that unit is remaining fresh and doesn't get fatigued throughout the game. But yeah, there's a ton of speed. There's a good mixture of size and speed in that group mm-hmm. too. It's not, I mean, you can put Nick Anderson and Jaden Gibson out there. They're both 6'4" plus. I mean, Gibson's about 6'6", 6'7", somewhere in that range. And they both can run like crazy. And then you've got Deion Burks who, you know, he's not as tall by any stretch, but he is fast and he's not small at all. So just looking at the pieces they have to work with, it's got, I think, the potential to be a real headache for the defenses that they play. It doesn't matter if they're playing, you know, Georgia or Vanderbilt or whomever else, it's going to be a problem. And there's a lot of things to be excited there. Which is kind of interesting when you think about what we were all talking about with the wide receiver group at this point last year, because there were a lot of pieces that were new, that were young and unproven. And you know, while you could look at the talent that was in that room and say, yeah, I think there's promise here and there's room for optimism, you definitely couldn't point it out and say, well, it's going to be one of the best groups on the team or, you know, in the conference or whatever measure you wanted to apply there. And coming into this year, it's almost the complete opposite. It's and this was proven out by the results last year. I mean, they proved to be one of the best position groups on the team as far as production and consistency and everything else. And a lot of that is tied back to Emmett Jones and his ability as a coach and tying that in with the talent that's in that room and pulling it all together. So I think it would be it's totally valid to expect that trajectory to continue upward. And if you listen to reports coming out of spring practice, that definitely seems to be the case. I had a source tell me yesterday that the wide receiver group as a whole is kind of hitting their stride here as they get into the midway point of spring practice. And that's definitely good news for senior fans as they look to, you know, have that group maintain that consistency and continue to be a strength of the team.
And a final one I want to touch on is a tight end group, a group that definitely is new faces this year. You got, of course, the product out of the product out of excuse me. You got the product out of Baylor and Jake Roberts. I believe we got a Southeast Louisiana. I don't know exactly his name, but the transfer out of Southeast Louisiana. And then Caden Helms, of course, a year ago had the unlucky injury and had some, couldn't even practice on the field a year ago. So tight end wise, what are we looking at? Is there a leading candidate? Could it be Jake Roberts? Could we see Bowers Sharp, Cade McIntyre? I know he showed some flashes early on. Last year, throughout last season, in 23, where are we? Can we see a mixture? Who's the? I would say probably expected starter come on August 30th.
As of right now, if you were going to run your first team out there today, it would be Bowers Sharp, and I think that will remain to be the case, barring any kind of surprise or injury or anything like that. Bowers Sharp has been by far the most impressive tight end of the group right now. You still have Jake Roberts, who's recovering from an injury, so he'll be in the mix for sure. And then you have the really talented freshman, Devon Mitchell, who's coming in as well. And I like a couple of other pieces there that we don't really talk a whole lot about. There's Josh Spaniel, who is still pretty new to football. Focus was basketball, I think, as recently as a couple of years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So you've got Josh Fanuel, Jake Roberts, Devon Mitchell, and then Bowers Sharp as the starter. And guys like Cade McIntyre and even Caden Helms, I think, have an opportunity to get into the mix there. Another guy that doesn't get talked about a lot, but I've heard a lot of buzz coming out of practice is Hamp Fay. So, you've got a lot of different pieces there. Again, Bowers Sharp, though, to me, is the clear-cut starter at this point, just based on how he has performed in spring practice, even going back to the winter workouts and how those went and what we heard coming out of that. So a lot of really good pieces there, and I think you've got a real opportunity for Latrell and Finley to be able to have confidence in a 22 personnel set for the first time, which is really night and day difference from what you had at this point last year, where it was, a beat up Austin Stogner versus, and then nobody else essentially that wasn't either experienced or injured. So, yeah, they really went out and improved that tight end room as a whole. And Bowers Sharp looks like he could be a dynamic presence there at that position. He's got size at 6'4", 250 to be a presence in the blocking and run game. And then he's got a lot of athletic ability that enables him to be a pass-catching threat down the field and create that kind of space. So, again, a lot to be encouraged about there, and it's not just Sharp. There's pieces in behind him, like we've talked about, that I think have a chance to come in and be an impact. And it'll be interesting to see how fall camp plays out, because there's a lot of playing time that guys will be vying for in behind Sharp, and who's going to be that second and third even tight end to be in the rotation. And there's a lot of talent, a lot of potential back in there. So that'll be one of the battles that I'll have an eye on in fall camp in particular. And even as we get into summer workouts, who is standing out in that arena, because they'll be doing a lot of 7-on-7 and it's always kind of a telltale sign to see who is consistent in the weight room and with what Jerry Schmidt requires from them during that period. So we'll monitor that as we go through summer, and then you get into fall camp, and it's a full on battle to see who can earn that time and be in that rotation.
September 21st, Tennessee. Of course, Oklahoma's inaugural SEC game, September 21st against Tennessee. Tennessee, who is coached by national champion quarterback Josh Heupel and former offensive coordinator of the Sooners. This one's kind of hard for me to imagine. I don't see Sooner Nation booing Josh Heupel, but I just don't know. On September 21st, regardless of the kickoff time, what do you think the reception is for Josh Heupel when he comes back on that field for the first time in quite a while as a coach and, of course, a long time as a player? But is he going to get a warm reception, or could we see some booms when it comes to that opening kickoff of the SEC?
No, I don't think there's going to be any cause or anything that would make me think that Heupel will get met with anything other than a very warm reception whenever he comes back. I know that the administration will go to great lengths to make that clear and to welcome him back. I don't know, you know, what they'll have planned or what they'll do, but knowing Joe Castiglione and this administration, I'm pretty confident there'll be some sort of a public recognition of sorts of Heupel and what he meant to the university and really still does, you know, still means to the university and what he accomplished. I mean, it's the last national championship that the program has won, and he was obviously a huge part of that. So just because things didn't end the way that anybody wanted them to whenever Bob Stoops made the change and let Heupel go, I know that left a sour taste in people's mouths, and again, it wasn't ideal. I don't think that's going to cause OU fans to have any animosity towards Heupel and treat him anything other than with a lot of respect whenever he comes back.
Comments below, listeners, watch it up there if you have any questions regarding Oklahoma or maybe your thoughts on Oklahoma's SEC inaugural season. Definitely leave them below. Lady Alpha showing some show love with Hi Y'all. Thank you for the support and, of course, watching and tuning in as well. We're looking as we look at the 2024 season, and what are the end all be all on your list? Let's focus on the spring game. What are you looking for? The top three or whatever exactly is on your list. What are you looking for the spring game on April 20th?
So the main thing that I'm going to be keeping an eye on is the offensive line and how they're working together as a unit, because that's obviously one of the bigger questions on this team as we get into the season. So it's obviously a new group. There's a lot of mixing and matching going on as far as you know, who's on the first team and who's at left guard or right tackle. I mean, there's a lot going on there as Beedenbill tries to figure out who is his best five and what that looks like on a series to series basis. And I think that's one of the things that you can actually evaluate to some extent in a setting like a spring game. So, that's definitely one of the things that I'll be watching. I also want to see, obviously, Jackson Arnold. I want to see how he performs. I want to see Mike Hawkins get back there, see what he can do. But then I want to watch a lot of the younger defenders that are on the team. I think everybody wants to see David Stone and Jaden Jackson, what they look like in Sooner uniforms. I want to see how they're utilizing Desan McCullough, if they decide to show anything as far as a position change or different schemes. You know, it's a spring game, so expectations are pretty low as far as them coming out and running any kind of exotic new formations, you know, defensively or offensively even, that would tip their hand as far as what they're working on or what they're doing. But I think individually, just looking at how a guy like Jacoby Johnson in the secondary performs, there's been a lot of talk about him and his progress and his development as a player. So I'll be watching that for sure. I want to see Bauer Sharp and see if he lives up to the hype. I want to see, you know, Deion Burks and how he looks running down the field. You know, just a lot of individual things. And I think that's probably the lens that's probably the most effective way to view a setting like this is just, you know, look at individual performances and guys and what they look like and just enjoy it. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of different faces out there that we'll get to see. And, you know, who knows what kind of scoring system they'll come up with for us this year. I think we were up into the hundreds, if I'm not mistaken, which was interesting. So, yeah, that's part of the fun too, just figuring out how the heck they calculate that. But, it promises to be a good time. And, you know, it may be kind of a thing that goes under the radar a little bit. I want to see the kickers. I want to see Schmidt, yep. You know, Schmidt and Keltner out there and see how they perform whenever it's not just coaches and players at practice. You know, they've got 60,000+ people out there, hopefully, that are watching and seeing what they do. So it'll be fun and lots to keep an eye on and lots to watch and we'll see if they can put on a show for us.
Yeah, I remember last year I was on the I was on the East Club level, and when I think the final play was the fact that the deciding factor, I think it was 100 points. So we were pretty ecstatic just for the fact that we saw triple digits in football nonetheless. But I'm looking forward. Well, a lot of things I'm looking forward to, especially Michael Hawkins, the hype that he comes in. Coming into camp, spring camp as it is, especially that offensive line. We'd love to see how they jive in that defense. Of course, I know improving last year, I know Brent Venables isn't happy where they're at yet, and I think they can just get better from there. But overall, I'm ready for them just to kind of get a feel of what this team looks like. And next question, as we swap over from football to basketball, is another OU sports 24 schedule. Tough to kind of acknowledge it because obviously we're just too hard to predict. What's your over under? What's the probably more realistic record on when it comes to this 24 team? And I have them right now 7-5, just based on what I'm going off of last year and kind of getting the feel of, but it's kind of tough obviously without seeing the spring and obviously knowing more as we get into summer camp. But as of right now, you're way, way too early. OU overall record, what are you looking at right now for the 24 Sooners as we head into the SEC?
So I think they end up with 9-3 at the end of the year. So I think they will have a defense that can compete with anybody in the conference, and that'll give them a chance to win virtually every game that they play. So, and then from there, it's just a question of how the offense can come together, and can they be better in some of those close game situations, and can they be better on the road, you know, in some scenarios that they've struggled in the last couple of years. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But I think they've got a legit opportunity to go 9-3. And to me, that's the floor. If you go 8-4, you're probably going to miss the playoff, even with the expanded format. You're obviously not competing for any kind of conference championship at that point. And I think you've got to be to some extent disappointed in that kind of result. And with this defense and who they have returning and who they have on offense, just from a talent perspective, I think you got to be at least hoping, if not expecting, that they can pull off 9 wins. And then from there, I think you're probably in the playoff at that point if you can win 9 games. But we'll see. The end of the year schedule with Alabama and LSU is going to be a rough one, because you never know who's going to be injured and what your team is going to look like at that point of the season. And they'll have played a grind of a schedule at that point whenever they get down there. And so that'll be one to watch. But But again, defensively, if especially if they can keep their key guys healthy, I think you're gonna be looking at an opportunity to win 9 or 10 games, and if things fall their way. But it's gonna require their best, and they'll have to rise to the level of competition for sure. And that includes the players, but it also encompasses the coaching staff and Venables and improving some of the game management issues that we've seen pop up in his first couple of years. So there's a lot of different things that have to come together for that to happen. But I think there's a legit opportunity for those things to be improved upon, and for some of these new faces to really come together and gel in ways that should be exciting.
I know we're a year and a half still away, and I'm not worried about 2025, but I'm loving the fact that we play Michigan in 25. What are your thoughts on that that matchup? I know, like we said, we're a year away from that still, but just the fact that we get the same schedule as the SEC this year as we do next, but adding Michigan in, does that continue to be, as Josie always does, to schedule good teams? And your quick thought of that year away matchup with Michigan?
It's going to be entertaining. It's going to just be another brutal addition to an already difficult SEC schedule. So it seems like that's the direction that the SEC likes to go, though. They like for their teams to play some pretty tough out of conference mm-hmm. opponents every year. So OU is definitely not going to be any different in that scenario. So it'll be entertaining for sure. It'll be a good game for the fans to watch. But boy, is that going to be a brutal way to open the year and then jump right into the fire that is the SEC schedule.
Switching over to football over to basketball, and Oklahoma men's team just missing out on the NCAA tournament for the third straight year. And I know Porter Mosier was frustrated. I know a lot of Sooner fans were, some weren't. Depends on who you talk to, kind of mixed feelings. But we're kind of back in the same situation as we were a year ago. Oklahoma now losing – what, 4 or 5 players now? I'm going to butcher his name. I hope not. But Javion McCollum with the game winner over Oklahoma State up in Bedlam this year. He's now the latest of the bunch to enter his name in the transfer portal. I like where Mosher's trying to take this team. It's kind of difficult. I'm sure it's difficult for him now, back-to-back years, practically losing almost half of the roster. In general, whether regardless from graduation and or transfer portal. As OU fans, I know reading comments, a lot of them are a little concerned. Is there behind the scenes? Obviously, we may not know, and obviously won't go into that much depth. But, someone that covers in the university athletics, should we as OU fans be a little concerned? This is now the second straight year that we're now having to practically redevelop another roster. Is this practically what we're going to see, not just at Oklahoma, but, college basketball and football alone, just because of the transfer portal and the NIL? Is this part of what we're going to have to get used to?
I mean, it's a very good question. I think that whenever you look at just the national landscape, you do see a lot of transients in pretty much every roster across the country, at least to some extent. Now, in OU's case specifically, I think you have to be objectively concerned about the level to which that roster turnover happens or has happened the last couple of years, and then again this year. And it's really difficult to build a culture, to maintain momentum within a program, if you're constantly replacing half or more of your roster every season. It's almost impossible. And so, again, I think you have to be concerned about that. It is an issue. But the bigger issue is that the rosters that have been put together haven't been good enough to make the tournament to date. And I mean, there's a lot of, I know you can look at the end of the season, and there was a lot of talk about how OU should have made the tournament, especially over some of the other teams that, that were selected. And you've got a legitimate case there. But if you're OU, you know, don't lose to Texas Tech.
Yep.
And, exactly. And if you don't do that, then you're probably in. And there's a couple of other games, you know, mid to late in the season that they weren't able to win, that they had a real opportunity to do so if they make a play here or there, or, you know, don't make a mistake here or there. And so, in the same way that things were kind of ripped away from them with the so-called bid thieves and the teams that, that won their conference tournaments that, that weren't supposed to, or that wouldn't have gotten into the NCAA tournament if they hadn't won those conference tournaments. The flip side is that you had games within your control if you're OU, where you could have been, you could have put it out of reach and made it to where it wasn't even a question for the committee to put you in, and it didn't get done for whatever reason. Ultimately, that's on Porter Mosier, and you can dissect all the reasons why that happened. I mean, there were, you can come up with reasons all day long. Bottom line is that it's a third straight season of not making the NCAA tournament. By any measure, that's not acceptable, and that's not in dispute by anybody, either in the fan base or on the staff or the administration. And so it requires a certain degree of soul searching and some deep questions that have to be asked about, you know, how you are running your program, and is Porter Mosier a good fit? And while it doesn't, I think it makes sense to bring him back for another year. It definitely can't be a fourth year of the same results, you know, without some major changes happening. But to answer your question, I don't know that outside of making, I think if you make the tournament next year, then suddenly things could turn around. And if you make the tournament, then that could be a shot in the arm from a culture perspective, from just a team program momentum perspective, to where it gives Mosier more of a pitch to make to some of these guys that have eligibility remaining, and convince them to stay, maybe win some of those arguments that he hasn't been able to win here over the last 3 years. But time will tell. First step is get a roster together that can make the tournament and compete in the SEC. If you do that, then I think you may resolve some of these you know, roster turnover issues. But you have to construct the roster well. You have to bring in guys that are athletic, that compete at this level, because not every player that comes from, you know, a group of five or a lower level type team is going to be able to compete physically in a P4 conference or a P5 conference, or you know, however that's constructed in the basketball world. But the point is that you've got to have a roster that can compete within the conference schedule and get to the tournament. And then you've got a case to make about, you know, hey, come back and try this for another year and stay on the team.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I know for sure we obviously don't know the schedule. Basketball is not like football. And we know 10 years down the road, we know 5 years down the road, unfortunately, it's kind of different on that one. But we know, obviously, Battle for Atlantis, you know, they're part of that tournament during the Thanksgiving holiday. And Arizona, Creighton, Davidson, Gonzaga, Indiana, Louisville, and their former Big 12 foe, West Virginia. Obviously not an easy bracket regardless of how you look at it. Davidson might be your most easiest, but I might be underestimating them. But, you know, they're in a position now. Hopefully they can recruit. But I will say, as a fan, and at the same time, not just for as a hot take, but it's just realistic stuff, is OU, the basketball program and the university, in my opinion, really needs to figure out what, I know they have that potential bid out for the new arena that is near University North Park, that potentially, but that I really believe, and I might be wrong, that or LNC, that the LNC is really a big ISO when it comes to recruiting, because it's just, I'm sure you've been there many times. It's just, you walk in and there you go. It's what you see is what you get. And so I'm sure, hopefully not, but I'm sure that has got to be a kind of a downfall for Porter and even for the women's, for Jenny on the women's side. But, you know, it seems like they do far pretty good right now. But hopefully they can get around, because the SEC in basketball won't be no easy task for Coach Mosier and company.
No, not at all. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the Lloyd Noble Center and facilities and administration support over the years. They need a new arena, bottom mm-hmm. line. That is, it is so far overdue. It's not even funny. I mean, it is a huge problem. And so you hope that the city of Norman, even though to me, building something that's off campus is far from ideal, it is far better than what they have right now in the LNC, unfortunately. So I was one of those people, and this is maybe a little bit of a romantic, you know, unrealistic view of things. But whenever they played that game in McCasland early in the year,
yep,
I was one of the ones that was thinking to myself, man, it would sure be nice if they could just put some mm-hmm. money into this thing. I mean, turn Lloyd Noble into a parking lot and bus people up there, you know, or just let the students have it. I mean, you can come up with a million ways. Right? I mean, that atmosphere, I mean, that atmosphere yep. compared to what you get in the LNC, I mean, just no comparison. I mean, to me, having, you know, 4,000 people screaming and yelling and filling that place with sound and generating that kind of atmosphere is far better than, you know, 10,000 in the LNC on a great day. It's just crazy. So, you know, anyway, but that's never going to happen. That's just not going to, there's a whole bunch of reasons why it wouldn't work. I understand them all. I'm not saying it's realistic. I'm just saying it would be nice to me. No. If you could make that sort of thing happen, but anything but the LNC, I think that has to be the slogan, is anything but the LNC.
No, I'm with you, Matt, real quick, and then finish out with the transition of each team. You know, I actually brought that idea up with a buddy of mine. We were talking, just texting, and him and his wife went to a game in the LNC, and I told them, I said, I took my dad to a game. Oh, God, I swear, I don't know, 2017, 18, I don't remember. It was Texas Tech and Norman, that's all I know. And it's right before his major stroke in 20, but he looked around. He said, when that thing opened, he was a freshman at OU, and he said, and he'll be 66 this year. So that kind of gives everybody some kind of eyesight where how old, you know, yeah. kind of, oh, it's been a while. He said, has no, besides a few things here and there, it hasn't changed, especially the seating. So, you know, long overdue, definitely. I know it has a lot of history, but some days you gotta move on. And I always brought up, why can't they use McCasland just to as temp until they've either really gut it out like TCU did, or you know, I would say tear it down, but I don't know if that's feasible, but I'm sure they won't. I don't know what the solution is for them besides getting off campus, but you're already having issues drawing people because it's semi not on campus, even though it kind of is, but it's not. But anyway, I'm kind of curious with this program. I hope, you know, it's got a lot of potential. I hope, you know, Porter Mosier can get it going, but he's got a tough draw. And as we wrap up the show, final question for you is, sports-wise, you're looking at, you know, I would imagine gymnastics should be all right, softball should be all right. Is there a few athletic programs in your eyes that's going to have a rougher, that they were kind of struggling in the Big 12 and you just don't see them competing for a while in the SEC or for any at all?
Yeah.
What programs are those in your eyes? I can see probably three. And what are the ones that's going to have a smooth transition as we wrap up the show?
So I think that baseball is going to have a lot tougher,
yep,
a lot tougher schedule, a lot tougher competition in the SEC. You've got a lot of teams in the SEC that regularly compete for trips to Omaha, if not the national championship. So that's going to be a battle. Big 12 is no slouch, don't get me wrong, but the SEC is a different animal, both in terms from the competition as well as the fan support. It's just on a different level. So that I think that'll be an interesting one to watch. The sport that I think could maybe have an easier time is basketball, men's basketball in particular. I mean, there's a lot of good teams in the SEC for sure, and the competition won't be easy, but the Big 12 from top to bottom has been just a murderer's row of quad one teams for years now. And now that has not always translated to success in the tournament, but when it comes to winning games in a regular season and getting to the tournament, it's been really hard. I mean, OU had maybe an average to maybe just below average team this year in basketball, a team that I think in almost any other conference schedule would have had no trouble making the tournament, but they played in the Big 12 where almost every single time they run out on the floor, it's a quad one. It's a quad one game. So, you know, that makes it hard. That makes it really, really hard. And while the SEC is tough, it's not the Big 12 from the mm-hmm. basketball perspective. So I think basketball could actually have a little bit of an easier time depending on how well they can construct the roster here going into the season and who they can bring in and what that looks like. But I think those are the two that stand out to me.
Yeah, I definitely say baseball, I think, would be one that's going to struggle, you know, early on, hopefully not in the long haul, but early on for sure. I still imagine basketball, men's basketball for sure would be up there as well. I think gymnastics and softball, they're perfect. I think football is in the mix as well with them. I think they'll be perfectly fine off, and I don't really see them, especially the softball team. They're phenomenal. They're just good. Barring a lot of stuff going on, I don't see any issues that they would have. But Matt, it was a pleasure having you on, sir. I appreciate your time and your insight on everything Oklahoma Sooners.
I really enjoyed talking to you, Mike. It's been great. And again, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Where can the listeners find you on your social medias as we wrap up?
So you can find me on Twitter or X at cap_405. You can also find me on the Crimson Captain Twitter or X account, which is crimson_cap. We have a website at crimsoncaptain.com where we have a lot of our free articles. It includes coverage of sports that are non-football and basketball, but we have articles that you can read there on the website. And we also have a Discord server that you'll find linked to on the website where we post all of our premium content, primarily around football and basketball and baseball and softball and all that. So we're a growing team. We've got a continuing to grow our group of writers and our overall content generation team. So look for us on there, and always, you know, feel free to send me a message if you've got a question or something you want to talk about. I'm always down for that.
There you guys have it, guys. Matt Blackwell, the Crimson Captain. Matt, enjoy the rest of your night. Have a wonderful week, and let's get ready for some spring football here in a few weeks.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Matt. You've been listening to the Air Raid Tech Podcast. Find us on all major podcast platforms. Listen to us and subscribe on YouTube. Guys, it was a fun one. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend. And as always, listen to all the wonderful podcasts on the Off the Ball Network. Take care. See you all next week.
You've been listening to the Air Raid Attack Podcast. Sports, life stories, general topics, but mainly football. Can you blame us? Thanks for listening to the show. We hope you had as much fun as we did. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit us up on Twitter at Air Raid Podcast and on YouTube and Facebook at Air Raid Attack Podcast. See you next time at your home of the unfiltered, unscripted, 100% authentic Air Raid Attack Podcast.
Let's go!
Let's go!
Go! Go!